Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And by Antioch University New England, offering doctoral degrees in clinical psychology, environmental studies, and marriage and family therapy, as well as master's degrees and certificates. antioch.edu/nhradio.
And from Dartmouth-Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire legislature reopens for business tomorrow for the second year of its biennial session. With the budget completed last year, lawmakers will turn to other topics. And for 2018, it's a long and weighty list. Proposals drawing lots of interest include an expansion of school choice, residency requirements for voting, and a long-term fix for Medicaid expansion. Today in The Exchange, it's our annual legislative preview, where House and Senate leaders outline their priorities. And let's hear from you. What's number one on your list for legislative attention this year? Send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us in studio, Senator Chuck Morse, a Republican from Salem, and Senate President. And Senator Morse, Happy New Year, and thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Also with us, Senator Jeff Woodburn, a Democrat from Whitefield, Senate Minority Leader. And Senator Woodburn, thank you for making the trip.
Thank you very much.
Also with us, Gene Chandler, Republican from Bartlett, and Speaker of the House. And Speaker Chandler, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
And also with us, Representative Steve Shurtleff, a Democrat from Penacook and House Minority Leader. And Representative Shurtleff, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, lots of Americans say after an especially divisive year last year, they want to see politicians come together and solve problems. There's a lot of talk about this over the holidays. On what issues do you see yourself able to work with the other side this year? And I'll turn to you first, Senator Morse.
Well, I think there's several things that came out of the budget that I think we all agree on. I mean, even though some of us voted for it and didn't vote for it, I mean, reality is we all want to see New Hampshire's economy go forward, and I think that's mostly what we worked on last year. As we come back to this session, I think there's certainly some issues that are going to come in around health care that I think we can come together on. I certainly believe as we start to talk about health care, we'll continue to make sure that we take care of the people in the state of New Hampshire.
So the budget last year that you came together on sort of set a good table for some bipartisan compromise this year, it sounds like, Senator Morse.
I think the budget last year certainly set what I believe is where New Hampshire's headed, and I certainly believe we needed to deal with the economy, education. I think those are issues that the people care about, and we needed to do that.
What do you think, Senator Woodburn? Where do you see yourself working with Republicans this year in the Senate?
Well, first, I think 2017 was defined by partisanship and, you know, tax cuts for the wealthy, making it harder to vote, taking money out of our schools. But 2018, I think, will be a year where politically people want to come together and find solutions. And we look forward to expanding Medicaid, working with reasonable Republicans. I think family leave is an important priority where there's a good possibility maybe this week in the House that will pass. And I think in a bipartisan fashion, I think we'll see the death penalty repealed, which in my view is a very good thing.
Death penalty repeal. That's ambitious. It comes up year after year and never quite makes it.
Right.
How about you, Representative Shurtleff? Where do you see yourself working with the other side this year?
Well, first of all, as I've mentioned before, I'd say about 80% of the bills that we deal with in the House are passed with bipartisan support, either on the consent or on the floor without any debate at all. It's that 20% that we need to work together on. And I think there are several bills, health care and others, where we can reach a good conclusion and a good compromise.
When you say health care, do you mean
Medicaid
expansion specifically?
It's a priority.
Yeah, okay. And how about you, Speaker Chandler?
Well, I think the opioid crisis, and I guess it's safe to call it that now, everyone is should be in the forefront of bipartisanship. Hopefully it will be. And then something that isn't talked about very much, I guess, something that's near and dear to my heart is the 10-year plan. Our infrastructure in the state of New Hampshire is critically important that we move forward. And hopefully that'll be in a bipartisan manner. It usually is, and I look forward to that.
All right. And again, if you want to join us with your comments and questions, what's on your list for a top legislative priority in 2018? We welcome your comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And as Senator Morse mentioned, you know, last year you all did the budget, came together on that. And in a budget year, it's pretty obvious that you have to do that. I mean, that's what you're there to do the first year of the session. So congratulations on that. But what about this year? What do you think? I'll turn to you first, Speaker Chandler. What do you absolutely have to do this year? Is there a have to like there is in the first year of the session with the budget?
I don't know if there's anything that is have to do. There's things, obviously, that both sides, both parties would like to do. Have to do, so I guess that's a little, I don't know. Wait, and even you could say the 10-year plan, which I referenced earlier, if I certainly hope that we have a new 10-year plan. The downside is if you don't, we just keep reverting back to last 2 years ago and we continue along that path. I don't think that's the right way to go. But so when you say it's have to, it's not necessarily. So I think things in general are what both sides would like to do, and then it's where we get together and what passes.
So unlike the budget where there's a must, by law it says you've got to come up with a budget by the end of June. There's nothing of that magnitude this time around.
Not in my opinion, no.
Yeah. What do you think, Senator Morse?
Well, I've always treated Concord as we're up here to do the people's business. So I think as we deal with 1,000 pieces of legislation, plus or minus, we'll debate them all. And I certainly believe that, you know, we've been through budgets, and you can say we had to pass them. I mean, I've certainly been through years where we've left here and not had a budget. So
that's right. I remember that.
I think we can all agree here that there'll be debate, and it'll be what's right for the people in New Hampshire. And as we do that, I strongly believe that budget was a blueprint for what needs to happen in the state of New Hampshire. I don't think we want to go back to where we were in 2008. New Hampshire certainly, you know, fended to be the worst in all the states around us coming out of the recession. And I don't think that's where we want to be in the future. I think we want to protect against that. And that budget's going to protect us for future growth.
So switching then, as Speaker Chandler alluded to, from have to like to, what would you all like to see done? And I'll ask you for now just to pick one or two issues, and then we'll definitely flesh them out throughout the hour. So go ahead, Senator Woodward.
Well,
what's one and two on your list?
There's two things that we have to do. Medicaid expansion needs to be removed. 50,000 people that are getting health care today, and not one of them should lose their health care. And there's 10,000 people getting drug and alcohol treatment services today. It should not end, and that needs to be priority number
one. Has to be reauthorized. By the end of 2018.
The bipartisan, very successful, saving people in our hospitals and making our economy stronger and better. The other is the opioid epidemic. We're not out of the woods on that. We're on track to spend less money in the forthcoming budget year than we did in the last year of Hassan's service as governor. We need to continue to make investment. We have a $100 million slush fund, rainy day fund, that we should access that money. That slush has turned to ice and snow in this day. And we need to open up our hearts and open up our minds to investing money in stopping this epidemic. It is destroying our workforce. It's destroying the state of New Hampshire. And we are the wealthiest state in the country, and we spend less than all but one state. And we need to do better.
I want to ask all of you about that. But you first, Representative Shurtleff, what's on your really would like to do?
Well, I think, Speaker Chandler and Senator Woodburn both mentioned the opioid crisis. And I think one of the biggest weapons we have in the fight on drug abuse in the state is Medicaid expansion. With the passage of Medicaid expansion, we're seeing inmates in the state prison and county jails now for the first time getting drug treatment, as well as those that are on the street that need it are getting help through Medicaid expansion. So that's a priority. The other priority for me is the Family Leave Act that Senator Mary Guile has worked 2 decades on, and I'm hopeful that this year we'll finally get to pass it.
Again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Let's get your list of priorities for the legislature this year. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Okay, so because everybody mentioned it, let's jump into Medicaid expansion first. And as you said, Senator Woodburn, about 50,000 low-income Granite State adults get this coverage now because of the Affordable Care Act's expansion of Medicaid. Before we talk about what New Hampshire might do, though, Senator Morse, maybe to you first, what's the status of federal funding for Medicaid now? Do we know? Because that's part of this whole picture.
Well, we never left this, to be honest with you. We've been working on this since we left the budget in July, and we certainly came back to make sure that as we go forward, we're looking to figure out how New Hampshire can stand in this. I mean, I was a leader in this originally. I intend to be a leader in it. I firmly believe New Hampshire has had some great successes here, but you also have to be honest about the process. We presented a lot of things over the last 4 years to the federal government that they didn't find acceptable, and I think that's wrong. I mean, you saw some of that with the report that just came out from Anthem, where they're questioning some of the emergency room visits with the people that are paying for it. Well, we should be looking at that in our Medicaid program, too. And I think that's what we'll do. In any case, I think we have to make sure we protect the New Hampshire taxpayers. The federal government has been supportive of a program. We need to make them accountable. And I think that's an important piece. We shouldn't be coming up with a tax for the state of New Hampshire.
So the feds are supposed to cover the bulk of the cost, right, Senator Morse, 90%. Is that where it stands now? Because we hear so much confusion out of Washington about the future of this
program. Well, it's not down to 90% yet.
Yes,
I mean, as you get to 2020,
years.
You'll get down to that percentage. We certainly had a solution in New Hampshire that the federal government decided wasn't going to be acceptable. I think the federal government needs to tell New Hampshire what they can afford to pay for, and New Hampshire needs to develop its Medicaid system around that, and we will.
And the plan that I understand that's getting some bipartisan attention is a managed care program for Medicaid expansion. Is that right, Senator Morse?
Well, we certainly want to talk about moving the people that are currently on private insurance into managed care program under Medicaid. And that's something that will be debated. Senator Bradley's committee debated it already. I think it'll be debated as we move forward.
What do you want to see happen with this, Senator Woodburn?
Well, I think that we need to extend the program. I think using the Medicaid system is the appropriate place to do this. I think it'll be more cost effective than the private system. It's making a difference in the lives of people in the state of New Hampshire. These are hardworking, low-income people. And the substance abuse issue can best be addressed by extending this. And New Hampshire needs to be fully committed to doing this. And I know the 10 Democrats in the Senate are willing to work with the Republicans, willing to be reasonable and find compromise. But so long as no person is thrown off health care, no person should lose coverage.
So how does managed care change the model from what we have now, Senator Woodburn?
Well, I mean, right now, the private system really is not equipped to deal with group of people that haven't had regular care and have lots of health care challenges. They bring in, it's a very expensive. It's how to utilize the system, a lot of emergency use, which we always use and has always been existent and we've always paid for. So everybody gets health care. It's how do we do it in an efficient manner? And I think the Medicaid system is used to dealing with these populations that have more complicated medical needs.
And to you, Speaker Chandler, we have seen in the past some bipartisan working together on the Senate side in terms of Medicaid expansion. What's your sense of how the House feels about whether to reauthorize this Medicaid expansion or not?
Well, it depends on whether you're talking about Republicans or Democrats in the House. Obviously, there's on the Republican side, there's a lot of discussion. And most of it, I will say, ends up around the financing. That's everyone talks about what a great thing it obviously it does, but when you get down to who and how are we going to pay for it? Having the same problem in Maine. The people in Maine voted for it, but now as the governor says in Maine, how are you going to do it? We're not going to pass another tax in Maine, he said. How are we going to pay for it? And that same issue comes up in New Hampshire. And so that's why, as the Senate president said, a lot of this has to do with what the federal government is willing to do or going to tell us what they will do so we can develop a plan that meets that.
Well, it must be hard to develop a plan when you don't know what the federal government is going to do.
Well, it is, certainly.
Go ahead, Senator Woodburn.
But 2 years ago when this was passed, renewing it, a very successful program, it passed by one single vote in the House of Representatives. No state dollars. And still, the vast majority of the Republicans oppose this idea. So, I mean, yes, money is a part of this, but let's also focus on the cost, the human cost, the keeping our hospitals open, the critical access hospitals, which have been struggling for years. You know, how are we going to build a stronger and better economy for all of our people? And we need to pass this legislation. We need to find a way to move it forward.
Well, of course.
$0 today. Zero state dollars. Should there be some? Possibly. But we need to pass this and get continue care.
What are your thoughts, Representative Shurtleff, on the cost, especially if the feds pull out or if New Hampshire moves to this managed care model? As Speaker Chandler said, there are concerns about a sudden new huge cost.
The federal government has promised to pay 90% of the cost of Medicaid expansion. This has been a promise that has been made by the previous administration, and I think the current administration would hold true to it. They've never gone back on their word when it's come to Medicaid. They've always upheld those promises. Jeff has mentioned that 50,000 plus are on Medicaid expansion now, but we know over 100,000 people have gone through the program. A lot of them have gotten off because they've got the medical care they needed, whether it be dental or health care, so they can go out and get a job and become viable members of the community. I understand that 178 Republicans have made a pledge to Americans for Prosperity to vote down Medicaid expansion or anything to do with Obamacare. I hope that's not true because a lot of the people in the communities they're representing are benefiting from this program. And also, lastly, it's like throwing a pebble in a pond. We see the big splash from those who are receiving the services. But those ripples include ratepayers who are paying less for health care, and we're also for taxpayers who aren't subsidizing visits to emergency rooms that were being used as primary care physicians.
So you don't think the feds will pull out? Because that's a concern that you're hearing. And then, as Speaker Chandler told us, Republicans in the House are saying, okay, where's the cash going to come from?
They never have in the past, and I believe they won't in the future.
Well, gentlemen, let's turn to another topic that has come up from our listeners a lot this past year. We did many, many shows on this topic and always received a lot of feedback, and that is voting rights, specifically a bill called HB 372. So since it's a House bill, I'll turn to you first, Speaker Chandler, and more broadly say, how much do you think our voting laws need clarification? That's what this bill seeks to do. That's what a couple other bills out there seek to do. How unclear is it now, and how much more clear does it need to be?
Well, I think forgetting all the rhetoric about whether we've had illegal voting or what has happened and all that, and you can, depending on who you talk to, there are instances of this and that. And sooner or later, those, I think some of those things will come out. I can relate one thing just personally. Right after when I was running for office last year, I got a hold of you can go get them, the people who requested absentee ballots and had just signed up to vote. And I did a mailing to those folks. And within 2-3 days or so, I got 3 back, undeliverable. Now, these are people who just barely registered with an address. Now, I don't know why they were undeliverable to the address they listed, but I think it's things like that we need to make sure of. I think the bottom line in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's mind, is we need to just do something to make sure that people who live in New Hampshire vote in New Hampshire, or the people who do vote in New Hampshire actually live in New Hampshire. And I think that's the whole thing. And I think even the Secretary of State has testified that our laws do need some tightening up, and I think that's true. Forgetting all about the fraud, there are stories, horror stories, this one way or the other. But I think the fact of the matter is they do need tightening up, and I'm hopeful that those laws will pass.
Should we have a residency requirement where you
yes.
have to be a state resident
I believe
to
so,
vote?
Yes.
Because that's the focus of one of
yes.
these bills.
Right.
All right. I know everybody else wants to jump in on this. We will do so on the other side of the break. We've gotten some emails from our listeners, too, about what they want you folks to focus on. Here's one person, didn't give a name, says they want you to focus on, let's see, I oppose gutting our public schools by expanding school choice. I feel trying to restrict voting is unconstitutional. This person says we need practical issues that benefit the people, like Medicaid reauthorization, the opioid crisis, and infrastructure. So that's a list that we will jump into after a short break. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
I was wondering.
I'm curious to know more about.
My question is, what is a filibuster?
How does the Electoral College work?
What is required for declaring war?
A majority whip.
Congressional caucuses.
You've got questions? We've got answers. Civics 101, the shame-free podcast refresher course on how our democracy works. There is no such thing as a stupid question. So ask away and subscribe to Civics 101 on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts.
Thank you so much. Keep up the excellent work.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, top legislative priorities for 2018. A panel of House and Senate leaders is with us, and let's hear from you, of course. Send us an email with your top legislative priorities for the year, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Senator Chuck Morse is here. He's Senate President, a Republican from Salem. Senator Jeff Woodburn, Senate Minority Leader and a Democrat from Whitefield. Gene Chandler, a representative from Bartlett and Speaker of the House. And Steve Shurtleff, a Democrat from Penacook, House Minority Leader. One more time, that email address for you to join us, exchange@nhpr.org. Or call 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, just before the break, Speaker Chandler was talking about voting rights. There's a bunch of bills. This certainly received a lot of attention last year. It's getting a lot of attention this year. I wonder what you think, Senator Moore. Speaker Chandler said, yeah, he thinks that some of these definitions need to be tightened up, including a residency requirement.
Well, I believe in the legislature. I mean, I've been there long enough to understand that whether it's health care or we're talking about voting, that's what debate and the process is all about. I mean, the Senate's going to deal with a piece of legislation this week. I'm sure the House will deal with it afterwards. I'm sure there'll be a committee, a conference that will deal with the issues we hear from the public on. And I do believe there's issues there that the public wants us to deal with. They want to make sure everyone's vote counts, and we'll deal with that.
So be specific. Are you talking about a residency requirement when you say make sure everybody's vote counts? Or?
Well, I think when it comes to residency and domicile, I mean, it's a two-tiered system today, and I think we need to make sure that it's a one-tier system, that everybody's treated the same. And that's what the people in New Hampshire deserve, and that's what they're asking for. And as we go through the process, I think making New Hampshire like the states around it, like Massachusetts and Maine and Vermont, I think there's nothing wrong with talking about that, and that's what we're doing.
Representative Shurtleff, why shouldn't we have a residency requirement for voting here in New Hampshire?
Well, we've had the law as being domiciled, and it's worked in New Hampshire for decades. It's only recently that we've been hearing about this idea to change that to residency instead of domicile. Now, some people say it's because of the college towns, Durham, UNH, Plymouth State, Hanover, Keene, the college students voting predominantly Democrats. And there are some, I understand, that believe in a big election like the last U.S. Senate race, that 1,000 votes could have made a difference if they were required to be residents of New Hampshire, not domiciled. We see a lot of our students that come to UNH or any other schools in the state who stay here after graduation. We have a tremendous brain drain from New Hampshire. So many of our students are going out of state. If we can get those students to stay here and eventually become residents, I think that's fine. But to change this law now to affect those college students and also affect those from my age that go south every winter who still maintain New Hampshire as their domicile and vote here but spend most of the year in Florida or in the south.
So let's say I'm from Connecticut. I go to Keene State. Shouldn't I just vote by absentee ballot in Connecticut?
I think it's when you come to Keene, the young people, we want to get them active in local elections and what's happening locally. And a lot of them become very involved in the towns in which they're living. And you're more in connection with what's happening locally in your community than you are back home in Connecticut or wherever you may be coming from. So I think to change this now, it makes no sense at all. It's a program that's worked. There's been no problems. There's been no collusion or anything else. There's no need to change it. Only to deny possibility young people the right to vote.
Senator Woodburn, what do you think?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. New Hampshire does democracy better than any place else in the world, and we have a system that's locally run, locally operated, runs very, very well. What this bill is trying to do is to make it harder for young people, students, to vote. These are people who spend most of the year in the communities where they want to vote, and it's requiring them to register a vehicle. And that, in essence, is a poll tax. It creates a cumbersome process to discourage voting. It's all about the Republican national strategy to create this false sense that there is fraud going on, to restrict voting because demographics that don't typically vote for progressive and populist candidates. So this is it's all politics trying to change the rules to ensure who gets to participate in our democracy, and it's wrong.
Well, and we did a whole program on this late last year, and I am quite sure we will do a whole program on this at some later date. But you've heard the arguments. What do you think, Senator Morse?
Well, politics is suggesting it's a poll tax. I mean, reality is it's not a poll tax. I mean, every document that I've read doesn't equate to that. I think, you know, New Hampshire's about debate, and that's what we'll do. And we're not afraid to debate in public and talk about these issues. We want to make sure everyone's vote counts. But when the Secretary of State in the state of New Hampshire, who I think is one of the most fairest persons going, suggests that we need to make changes, there's something to look at.
So let me just, because this idea of a poll tax is not going to be crystal clear to everybody, so let me walk through what that might mean, and then you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. So, Senator Morse, if somebody shows up to vote, they have a Connecticut license plate again, we'll just use that, or Connecticut driver's license, and for purposes of voting, they say, I'm now a resident because I've showed up to vote. Then New Hampshire law says, okay, if you're a resident, you have 30 days to register your car. So is that where the poll tax argument comes in? Because that costs time and money?
That's where the politics would like to suggest it. I don't believe that that's the answer. I mean, we've had attorneys look at this. We've went as far as having the Attorney General's office look at this. I mean, it certainly has shown that it's not a poll tax in New Hampshire. I mean, look to Massachusetts, look to Vermont, look to Maine. I mean, it's states around us that are doing what we're suggesting in New Hampshire. And I think, you know, as we fine-tune this, we want to make sure we don't disenfranchise any voters. I mean, that's important to all of us in New Hampshire. So, but everyone's vote should count.
Go ahead, Senator Woodburn, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
We have a system in the state of New Hampshire that has plenty of checks on this in terms of signing an affidavit, providing identification of who you are. If the Republicans were serious about voter fraud, they would invest in money, simple technology that's used everywhere else in our society to be able to ensure people don't vote more than once. But this process requires someone to do an action after they vote. And it is the purpose they have to spend money to get a New Hampshire driver's license in order to, after the fact, to vote. So it is a threat. It is a concern that this would be followed up and legal action would be taken. So it's clearly designed to make voting more difficult.
The main thrust of this is not voter fraud. The main thrust of this is really very simple. And the system is broke in New Hampshire. It's simple that people should vote in New Hampshire who live in New Hampshire. That's it. Pure and simple.
But our United States senators spend less time in New Hampshire than a college student at Plymouth State College, or people in the military, or people in my district that work all over the world doing different types of things, but still count New Hampshire as their home and their domicile.
And they qualify to vote.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to set this aside just for the moment, but we will be doing lots more programming on this, I'm quite sure. And NHPR's news team has been following this closely, but we'll set it aside for the moment and go to our listeners. Again, join us with your top legislative priorities for 2018. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Chuck is in Keene. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Morning.
Morning. Go ahead.
I'm a county commissioner here in Chester County, and we're struggling with the mandate that the legislature really forced on nursing homes, for instance, to move into MCO phase two for taking care of the elderly. And we think they're managed very well now, and it's just a profit-making issue for the MCO companies. And so I wonder if you could have your panelists respond to what they think about the requirement that nursing homes and counties get involved with the MCO organizations.
MCO is managed care organizations, Chuck. So you're saying it's working pretty well now. You don't want to make this change if Medicaid were changed? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's going to be much more costly and take away services from the people who are being taken care of very well in the 10 county nursing homes that I'm familiar with.
Okay. Anyone know about that? How this possible, go ahead, Senator Morris, you've looked at Medicaid a lot, how this possible change that you and Senator Bradley are talking about would affect nursing homes?
Well, this is step two, I mean, which not only would affect nursing homes, I mean, some would like to do nursing homes first or the disabled community. But reality is, I agree with the caller. I think we need to research this more. I think there's important pieces here that haven't been debated. I certainly sat on a board in Salem with nursing homes, and I don't see all this extra profit hanging around. But I think from the MCO's point of view, which I did go visit one and talk about this, there's certainly ways we could teach people to use the system better. So how we incorporate that in New Hampshire hasn't been decided yet. There are deadlines that are out there that I think we have to deal with moving forward in writing the new legislation for bringing MCOs into New Hampshire. But look, MCOs are a great thing for the state of New Hampshire. I think they help people navigate through the system. I think in the future how we use them, whether you want to use them in step two or not, I think is still debatable.
Well, thank you for the call, Chuck. And again, you can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. You know, gentlemen, there are so many bills before you this year. I think somebody said more than 1,000. And from what I understand, that's typical. So we can't go through all of them. So instead, I'd like to actually have a little fun and ask you in very short fashion how you feel about a couple of these. Yes or no answers are preferred. So if you're ready, we're going to jump right in. I'm going to ask you about four or five bills before the legislature. And just super quick, I'll just go around the table. First of all, the sheer number of bills before the legislature. Should leadership cap these at a certain number or not? Yes or no? Speaker Chandler, what do you think?
No.
Representative Shurtleff?
No.
No.
Senator Woodburn?
No.
No. Okay. Your clarity and brevity is excellent. The age of judges. Given the severe shortages at some state courts, there's a bill to up the mandatory retirement age of judges from 70 to 75. Again, I'm just going to go around the room this way, starting with Speaker Chandler. Which age sounds better to you, 70 or 75 for judges?
75.
75.
Shurtleff, yeah.
75.
Woodburn? Yeah.
Yes, I could accept 75.
Okay. Well, that bipartisan stuff you guys talked about at the beginning, that's for real, I guess. Here we go. Speaking of required ages, another bill would make the required age for marriage in New Hampshire 16 instead of the current 13. When this bill comes up, will you support it? Yes or no? Speaker Chandler?
Yes.
Yes.
Shurtleff?
Yes.
Woodburn? Okay. Morris?
Yes.
Okay. Lastly, a House bill this year seeks to include gender identity to the state's anti-discrimination laws. Do you know how you will vote on this? Yes or no? Speaker Chandler?
No.
Definite yes.
Shurtleff, yeah? Woodburn?
Yes. Yes.
Morris?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was fun. That was our little lightning round. We thought we'd try something a little bit different this year. We'll jump back into some of our meatier topics now with our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Tim in Warner. Tim says, I'd like to hear why your guests do or do not support the toll increase. Tim says, I believe it would help our economy. And how about you, Representative Shurtleff? Did you support the toll increase? This didn't even come before the legislature.
No, it was through the
executive council and the governor.
Right. It was governor and council that made that determination. And the council seemed to support it, but the governor said he would not go along with the increase. I would reluctantly probably agree to the toll increase. As Representative Chandler knows, the funding for DOT is tight. And they need the funding. They need the money for our roads. And one of the biggest complaints we get is about our infrastructure.
Well, and Speaker Chandler, you spoke at the beginning about what a priority infrastructure is for you. So I'd love your thoughts there, too, on the toll increase. Even though, let's clarify for our emailer, it was an executive council decision, not a legislature decision.
Well, that's true. They get to suggest how much they're going to be. But the legislature is the only one that can implement any of the spending. If it did happen, the legislature decides in the 10-year plan where that money will be spent. It all has to be spent on the turnpike system. And the fact of the matter is that our turnpike system, is compared to the rest of the system, is in much better shape than the rest of our highway infrastructures to begin with. And the fact is that this toll increase was not, in my opinion, properly thought out, properly studied, and had to look at. I don't really know, actually, how I would come down and vote on it if given all the information and the time to take a look at it. But certainly hurrying this up in the Thanksgiving weekend, just didn't allow for any legislative participation. And I realize we don't have a participation as far as setting the actual toll, but we do have a big part in determining where the money would go. And I think that's important. People need to know where this money is going to be spent before they have a toll increase. And so I think it was just too much too soon to warrant support.
So just to clarify, this toll increase, the money would have only gone to toll roads, meaning 95 and 93?
Turnpike system, yes.
So if that's the
case, Joe Smith's Road up in Haverhill, New Hampshire doesn't get any benefit from increased tolls.
So people who hear about this think, oh, this would help my roads in Warner, like Tim, our emailer. No, not really.
That's right.
Go ahead, Senator Woodburn.
First of all, there's more money that goes into our infrastructure is going to help our entire system. But the real problem here was the way the governor handled this is it did not allow the process of a debate to happen. And that is the maneuver that was used to not allow three members of the executive council who wanted to move forward with this and have a discussion. He took it off the agenda. It's using backroom politics to prevent debate. We can't do that in the legislature. Every vote gets to be held on the floor with a hearing. But the wisest decision we made, and I'm very proud to be voted for the gas tax, 4 years ago, Senator Oush, a Republican from Derry, led this, did an excellent job, bipartisan effort, and everyone said, oh my God, prices are going to go up. Gas is substantially less today. We're making investments. Maybe we should have raised it more. If we want New Hampshire to grow, we need to have a great infrastructure, and we need to do better, and it needs more money. New Hampshire needs to think bigger, not small and cheap, and make the investment that we know to make New Hampshire a great place and a stronger place in the future.
And the reason that gas tax was successful and the reason it passed through the legislature, thanks to the efforts of Senator Morse and others, every single cent of what was being proposed for that increase, people knew exactly where it was going to go and what was going to be done and built by it. That's the difference between that and this ill-fated toll increase idea.
Did you want to jump in, Senator Woodburn?
Well, I
want to
say that
real quick,
that,
and then we'll move on.
Maybe our Republicans can tell us how they voted on, because I don't believe they voted in favor of it. That was a great move.
And Republicans did vote
the
in
gas
favor.
Tax.
Some did, but the vast majority did not.
Yeah, but I mean, Jeff, to be honest with you, influencing the process is why we're all there. We may not all vote on – you didn't vote on the budget. I mean, reality is it's a good budget, and we did a lot for people in categories that you would support. So, listen, 23 hearings in Gasset. This toll wasn't debated, and I think the governor did the right thing in making sure that it didn't go forward. Speaker Chandler hit the nail on the head. It's about process. There's a 10-year highway plan being debated before the House. It'll come to the Senate sometime in April. We'll debate it. If all these programs need to be funded, the council is going to be faced with the challenge of how to fund it with a toll increase. But the reality is that wasn't debated, and it wasn't brought up in these hearings. And the governor did the right thing by not letting the toll increase go through at this point.
I have a process question as we're heading into the break. We've been talking about money for roads and the gas tax and the toll and so forth. Senator Morse, given that this is a non-budget year, how much monetary issues do you expect to be dealing with? Or is that kind of off the table? This is more about political issues.
Look, with 1,000 pieces of legislation, whether Republican or Democrat, most of them will have a financial implication. So I think you'll be debating all of that. I'm a firm believer because I was trained in the highway system from Speaker Chandler. In year two, we don't debate capital, and we certainly live within our means. So.
Well, coming up, a lot more from our listeners. We've got phone calls on the line, some emails here that I want to share with all of you. And we'll turn to some other topics, including whether the legislature should take $10 million from the state's rainy day fund to go toward fighting opioid addiction. We'll talk about that after a break and a lot more, so keep it right here. The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, state legislative leaders outline their priorities for the new year. What's your number one issue for lawmakers this year? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our four lawmakers are Steve Shurtleff, a Democrat from Penacook, and House Minority Leader Gene Chandler, Republican from Bartlett, and Speaker of the House, Jeff Woodburn, Democrat from Whitefield, and Senate Minority Leader, and Chuck Morse, Republican from Salem, and Senate President. And all of you, I did want to get your quick thoughts on this proposal that Democrats have put forward, $10 million to be taken from the state's rainy day fund to go toward fighting drug addiction. Our two Republican lawmakers, how do you feel about that? And Speaker Chandler, I'll turn to you first.
Well, I think it's unfortunately, and I'll say this right up front, I just think it's what I call an unwise, it's just a political move. That's all it is. I mean, even in the thing, it blamed the President Trump, and I don't know how he interferes so much with the state of Hampshire, but whatever, that was part of the whole promo. And I think it's nothing more than politics. It's unfortunately using a vulnerable part of our population politically. I think, and it may be, I don't know if you can spend enough, I'll say that, but until we decide, and certainly we're only partway through the budget process, so the money that was approved last year, so we have some idea whether what's working, what isn't working. This is still a relatively new process for the state to deal with, and what mechanisms are beneficial, what is going to be important. So I think just throwing another $10 million makes a good soundbite, but in essence, I don't think it amounts to anything right now until we have some facts on what is working. And I'm sure the Senate president would have more on that since he was more involved with it.
But. Not a yes or no definitively, but more just let's think about where this money might go and how the money we've already spent is working or not.
Yes.
Okay. What do you think, Senator Morse?
Well, the first thing I want to make very clear is I think there is a crisis in New Hampshire.
Speaker Chandler said that earlier, too.
Certainly want the people to understand that we made serious investments in this budget in drugs and alcohol. I mean, we doubled the alcohol fund. We're making sure that the alcohol fund is actually being spent, which wasn't done in the last budget. And we certainly put over $23 million more into drugs and alcohol. I think that's important, but I also think it's important, I said earlier, I think it's important that we protect New Hampshire for the future. We don't want to go into a recession the way we went into it this last time in 2008. We certainly, putting $100 million away, came up $50 million short on what we should be putting in the bank, and that all came from the treasurer. There should be $150 million in savings in New Hampshire to run a good government.
In the rainy day fund.
In the rainy day fund.
Go ahead, Jeff Woodburn. I know you feel strongly about
President
this.
President Trump declared an emergency, the opiate crisis epidemic in this country, and Governor Sununu asked for $350 million to spend in the state of New Hampshire and got a tiny piece of that. And what this legislation is, the governor declares an emergency, access the rainy day fund. We have $100 million in surplus funds. And it is raining for those families who are struggling with this issue. New Hampshire spends less than every state in the country but Texas. We are the wealthiest state in the country. We are on track to spend less money in this coming budget, this next year, than we did in the last year of Governor Haslam's budget. This is not rocket science. Having access to beds, having access to treatment, prevention services in our schools, and recovery beds. There's issues all around the state of New Hampshire, and we need to address this issue as a serious issue, and not be cutting funding and not be supporting. And the alcohol fund, you know, it was a tricky little move the Republicans did a few years ago. It was a law that said 5% of the profits made in the state of New Hampshire in alcohol sales, and they reduced that number and then fully funded it. But, you know, we have not met that 5%. We have not met that. And I have a constitutional amendment this year that would say we require, if we are going to be pushing booze in the state of New Hampshire, we're going to support substance use. We need to, as a moral obligation, do more on this area.
So just to clarify again for listeners, 5% of the profits from any liquor sales in New Hampshire are supposed to go towards alcohol and drug
abuse.
That was the original law.
Yeah.
So where does it stand now?
3.7%.
And it's supposed to be 5%?
Yes.
Does everybody agree on that? Senator Morse?
Yeah, but understand one thing. For 18 out of 20 years, the Democrats ran the state of New Hampshire. That was voted back in the early 2000s. It was the Republicans that came in 2011 under Jeanne Forrester that said we need to start getting back into this. We've done a great job of getting in there. In the last budget, so you understand, Laura, they didn't even spend the money that we put in there. So for us to double it and put it in this budget, the governor is making sure that money hits the street, and that's an important piece.
Well, reiterating what Speaker Chandler said, you know, how is current money being spent? And for our two Democrats, I did want to ask you about oversight, where this money might go. After the substance abuse treatment provider Serenity Place was put into receivership recently, Governor Sununu said, these developments underscore the need for accountability and transparency in substance use disorder programs. We cannot simply spend taxpayer dollars on this problem without knowing where that money is flowing and without a clear plan for measuring outcomes and results. And this has come up not just with Republican leaders. So I want to go to Steve Shurtleff first. I can see you want to jump in, Senator Woodburn. But the idea that, you know, yes, people are spending money. Yes, the state is putting money into this. The question of whether we should put another $10 million in it or not. Governor Sununu seems to be saying, you know, let's see how current programs are working, because in some instances, as we found out, they're being stressed and not being able to accomplish their mission.
Well, first of all, going back to the Alcohol and Drug Fund, part of that money is going to the Sununu Center, not to direct interdiction programs for those with drug and alcohol problems.
The Sununu Center is the juvenile justice
system in Manchester.
Place, right.
Yeah. New Hampshire is third in the number of opioid deaths per capita in the country. New Hampshire is third in the number of babies born to mothers addicted to opioids. I've had school superintendents tell me that they have children in elementary school that have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder because of alcohol abuse and drug abuse in the family. This is an epidemic. And we know back in the 20s when we had the TB epidemic, we built Glencliff and we provided help for people afflicted with that disease. This is a disease that is affecting not just those addicted to drugs, but their families, their children, their loved ones, those that have been victim of crimes by those addicted to drugs. It's a real problem in the state, and it has been for a number of years. As far as where the $10 million will go, we're not going to throw the money at the program. We're going to look, work with the stakeholders, and find out where we can get the best results. But we've got to get some control over this problem, and I think it's time for the state to step up and do a little bit more than it has been doing.
What do you think, Senator Woodburn? What about a clear plan, as the governor says, for measuring outcomes and results?
This is the basic issue in the state of New Hampshire of how we address the need for funding and investment to make our state a better state. And the Republicans are saying right here that money doesn't matter. Well, let me tell you, having spoken to mothers who are trying to get their kids into drug and treatment centers, if it was their kids, they'd find the money and they'd make the investment. It doesn't seem to matter in terms of money to make this turn this problem. But we know that 48 other states are investing more than we are per capita. They're investing. There's plenty of evidence and there's plenty of need out there. Look what's going on in Nashua in terms of what they're doing in terms of connecting the different services and the transitional beds and the issues all around. There's good things happening in the state of New Hampshire, but they're underfunded. And you talk about some of the Medicaid expansion and the money that's needed there. New Hampshire, in terms of our reimbursement for Medicaid, is the lowest in the country. And that obviously has an impact on the stressing these systems that are having to pay for these services, plus our community mental health system, which is a feeder system for so many of these issues we could resolve if we could deal with the community mental health issues. So, you know, we're under court order there. So New Hampshire needs to take a look and say, we're not going to go crazy and spend like a drunken sailor, but there are investments that we can make, sound, smart investments that will make our state a better place.
What do you want to see, Speaker Chandler, in terms of ensuring that money would be well spent? What would make you feel better about adding that $10 million from the Rainy Day Fund, if anything?
Well, I think it's just going to take some time to get some reports back on what is working. I don't have the answer to that, and I never will probably, but there are experts in the state dealing with this issue, and given anything is taking too long, I agree with that. But the fact of the matter is, to just throw more money at something when we're not sure what's working and what isn't, we need to focus on the things that are working and then put the money towards it. Regarding the alcohol fund, don't forget, when that started out at 5% back, I don't know how many years ago now, we were probably making half the money or less than what we are making now. So that 3.7% is actually more money now than the 5% was then. So it's not like this whole thing has just dried up and gone away. But I think we need to look at that. Senator Moss alluded to the fact that they're not even sure they can spend the money that they've given them in the budget. The programs have to be proven. And it's up to the legislature to make sure on behalf of the taxpayers that when we give money to a program, it's effective.
Let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen. And Doug is calling in. Hi, Doug. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, hello. And hello to your panel, most of whom I served when I was in the legislature back up till 2002, although I've been out for a while. But I'd like to just talk a little bit about respect. You know, we've witnessed public officials and private citizens alike engaging in increasing levels of disrespectful behavior, such as name-calling, rudeness, threatening, harassing others, interrupting, bullying, vulgarity, profanity. And I think if this trend continues, it really threatens the future of our democracy. And I know the people on your panel are honorable people, but we need to hold our elected officials and our citizens to a higher standard of behavior, to listen to each other and respect each other. And I just hope that the leaders on your panel can do their part to encourage the members to live up to this standard, which is so important.
Well, Doug, do you think that the legislature here in New Hampshire will live up to that standard? What are your hopes?
Well, I mean, this has been a downward trend. You know, when I left the legislature, I gave a speech about how civil respect was in decline, and I guess I wish if we go back to those days, it was so much better. I mean, this is a trend. It's not just in the legislature. It's a trend nationally. But, you know, we need an open marketplace of ideas where people listen to each other and discuss with each other, and people are increasingly polarized, and I'm seeing it in our legislature down in Concord. I don't think I'd want to run again because it looks to me like it's just so difficult down there, and the way people treat each other, it's just not the same. And,
well, Doug,
and I'm
thank
really
you.
Concerned about it.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Morse.
Well, Doug, it's nice hearing from you. Listen, when I talk to people that want to run for office, honor and respect are the two things that I try to talk about first. I believe Jeff has done a remarkable job, as I believe we do in the leadership of the Senate. If we think there's an issue where a senator has stepped out and we think they need to be talked to, we do that. And Jeff's worked right alongside me on that, and I think it's important to the process. And, you know, as the public wants to comment on that, my door's open, and I'm sure Jeff's is, and I think we've shown that leadership.
Well, thank you for the call, Doug. And speaking of the way people treat each other, 2017 was a year of huge focus on the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace, including state houses across the country. How do you all feel about the critiques that have risen from both Republicans and Democrats, by the way, that the New Hampshire State House has been a less than comfortable place for some people to work, especially women? And I'll go around the room, but Senator Morse, you first.
Well, obviously, since I became Senate President, I've taken this challenge on. I honestly believe there's no room for sexual harassment in the State House or any kind of harassment. And I want to make it clear to the public that whether it's my door or the Ethics Committee or the Chiefs of Staff, those doors are open. And a recent article that I read about lobbyists saying that they weren't comfortable in the State House, we've certainly been working with the Chief of Staff from the House. Those rules that we wrote and we presented since 2014 were meant for the public, for lobbyists, for news people, for everyone, not just the people within the State House, that they should be able to come to the Senate President, the Speaker, our Chiefs of Staff, or the Ethics Committee and let us know. We are not going to let things like this happen. I can assure you of that. We've made great steps to make this that we're available to listen and solve the problems, and we will.
Well, former Speaker Jasper said at the end of last year that he was disappointed not everyone in his chamber had signed a form acknowledging that they've read the official State House sexual harassment policy. Speaker Chandler, two questions. First of all, how important is this? And second of all, do you know where things stand in terms of House lawmakers signing that form?
Well, I unfortunately don't have the exact numbers for you. It changed a lot in the last two or three months.
Sure, and the legislature opens tomorrow and people are on break.
The vast majority of the House members have signed that document. Now, whether they've read it or not, that's another thing. But at least they've signed it to say they've seen it. And I think it's important. I urge everyone to sign it and read it, more importantly. I'm not so concerned with the signing of it as I would hope they would read it. Sexual harassment or any type of harassment is something that won't be tolerated in the House. We have the staff in the House has already undergone sexual harassment training. In the next couple of weeks, there will be a course, I guess you'd call it, training offered to members, because that's voluntary. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout for that. But we're doing what we can to try to train people in the errors of their ways, I guess you would say. And it, as I said, it won't be tolerated. But we need to have the reports, as Senator Morse alluded to. We need to hear from people, whether it be citizens, members, whoever, if something like this is taking place. We can't deal with something if we don't know it's happening.
Well, and unfortunately, we have just about a minute left. But I do want to get our two Democrats in. But it's a slightly different question for you. First, I think, Steve Shurtleff, some women have said throughout this emerging process that if there were more females in leadership positions, the State House wouldn't feel like such an old boys club. Why do you think, Representative Shurtleff, that there are not many female leaders at the State House? We've got an all-female congressional delegation. It's not like New Hampshire has a thing against women in politics. So what's going on?
Well, I'm very proud of the number of women we have in Democratic leadership in the New Hampshire House, including our Deputy Democratic Leader, Cindy Rosenwald. Getting back to this question of the harassment policy, I'm proud of the fact that every Democrat in the New Hampshire House signed off on the sexual harassment policy. Secondly, serving on Ledge Administration, we came up with a proposal to deal directly, instead of going to the Ethics Committee, but to deal directly with the House of issues of impropriety or inappropriate comments made by House members. And I'm looking forward to that coming up before on the floor sometime very soon.
So instead of going through the Ethics Committee process, it would be more a direct line?
Directly, absolutely.
Interesting. Go ahead, Senator Woodburn.
I just want to say that, you know, under Senator Morse's leadership and other Republican leadership, and the door has always been open, and I think we close those doors and we have our issues we disagree with, but we come together on these issues of sexual harassment or State House policies, and I think we do an excellent job. Particularly, remember, we are a volunteer legislature, 424 volunteers. We don't have a big salary we're hanging over people's heads saying, sign this. So I commend the gentleman here, because getting 424 people to do anything is next to impossible.
Well, former Speaker Sitek used to call it like herding cats.
You know, so understand when you deal with ethics and all these other issues, it's not a workplace like many other, you know, when you're handing someone a paycheck. They're volunteers, and they're very independent, very ornery, and very difficult to lead. And that's what's great about New Hampshire, but it makes these things that much more challenging for the leadership, and I commend them for their efforts.
All right, well, the legislature opens tomorrow. I'm sure we'll all be talking again, but I really appreciate everybody taking time out on this very cold day to come in. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.